schools, along with state and local governments, depend on money generated from the state's coal industry. What would happen if that industry dries up? Senator Mike Phillips would like to start that conversation. Welcome to Capital Connections. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. I want to start, Senator, with first Senate Joint Resolution Number 5, and the short title is Interim Study Regarding Coal Phase-Out. And it passed out of the State Senate, third and final reading, on a 34-16 vote, which means you were able to get bipartisan support for studying about what should Montana do in the event, I mean, as we're seeing the decline of both the mining of coal and the burning of coal. I'd like you to remind people why you think this study is necessary.
Coal has been extremely important to the state of Montana and will continue to be important going forward. Just as one example, over the next 30 years, we take about $1 billion of tax revenue from coal and apply that $1 billion to the public employee retirement system. So for folks that work for the state, for example, their retirement system is very much buoyed by coal money. Well, I could go on and on.
Oh, I know. I mean, I'll just add a few. Roads and bridges,
sure.
Projects, irrigation projects, sure. Libraries.
You're hard-pressed to find.
Roads, yeah.
Any money in Helena that is provided to the state for the good things that the state of Montana intends to do that doesn't have coal dust on it.
Mm-hmm. Including just the general fund budget.
That's correct. But the fact is, when you look at an overwhelming mountain of evidence, the end of coal is coming. I don't know exactly when, but the simple observation is nothing lasts forever, and the beginning of the end of coal is upon us. And it has nothing to do with what Montanans think about coal. It has everything to do with what the worldwide markets think about coal. If you have a product that nobody will buy, you know what its value is? Zero. In the marketplace, your product has no value if you have no customers. Now, what's interesting, the whereas of this study bill matter. I brought this same basic bill in 2015. And for folks listening, all this little study bill does is pose the simple question, what would Montana be like without coal? Let's just think of it from a fiscal or financial perspective. What would it be like without coal? How would we keep the public employee retirement system whole if we didn't have nearly $1 billion of coal revenue expected over the next 30 years? And there's much more money than that. That's just what's going to the retirement system. So I brought this same bill in 2015, and I thought the collective head of the Senate Natural Resources Committee was about to explode. They simply could seemingly not imagine that anybody would ask the question, what would Montana be like without coal? So I brought it again.
Yeah, I mean, you figured, hey, you know, keep bringing it back again because, as you know, Senator, I mean, as a Democrat and as someone who is passionate, your background is as a biologist, mm-hmm. You know, do you think, I just have to ask, do you think the opposition in 2015 was against the idea or was it against you?
Well, certainly I can be the wrong messenger for many good messages. I'm more than willing to admit that sometimes people will see the sponsor more importantly than they'll see the idea. That said, I'm not a hard person to get along with. I'm really pretty easy. But nonetheless.
I mean, after all, you led the wolf reintroduction team at Yellowstone National Park, and I think that was either a friendly crowd or a hostile crowd, I think.
That's right, and I have spent my entire career now, almost 40 years, working on very controversial
yes.
endangered species restoration projects. I get that. I think that legislators would say they can separate, on average, they can separate the wheat from the chaff, and they can separate the message from the messenger.
So what's different this time?
I think they said no in 15, And some said no in 2017. Because to say yes requires that you at least tacitly recognize two things. Climate change is real, and the burning of coal is a contributor. And there are still many people that serve almost exclusively, Jackie, on the Republican side of the aisle that aren't willing to recognize climate change as a real problem. Now, I want to make sure folks understand something about me. I'm already imagining my final comments in 2019. When I finish in the Senate in 2019, my legislative career will be over.
Because of term limits.
Yeah, right. I'll stand up on the Senate floor and I will offer parting thoughts. And I already know fundamentally what I'm going to say. I'm going to say to both sides of the aisle, to serve well, you have to recognize that sometimes the other side is right. Sometimes the other side has earned the benefit of doubt. But on this particular issue, the Republicans or any Democrats, and I don't know of any, but anybody that says climate change is not a problem is wrong. There's not many things in life, at least in my life, that are black and white. My world is defined by all kinds of shades of gray. There's no gray with the fundamentals of climate change. It's a problem. It's a massive problem. It's becoming worse with each passing day. I think the bill struggled in 2015 because the members of the committee, they weren't there yet in 2017. More members were willing to say, we really need to anticipate what Montana will be like without coal.
And the money.
That's right. And to some extent, it was a function of what Washington State did. We had our neighboring states saying, we're not going to buy any coal, and we're going to shut coal strip units 1 and 2 down.
But I would have thought that, and, you know, maybe hindsight is 2020, that with this new presidential administration, the new Republican control of the Congress, that you might run into another brick wall.
Well, it's an interesting observation. Presidents have a lot of opportunity to affect the future, and their administrations have opportunity to affect the future. President Trump can't dictate to world markets what they will and won't buy.
He'll certainly try.
Well, good luck. Mr. President, good luck. I think he'll fail. When you look around the world, people are turning away from coal. They're turning away from coal because it's a problem, because the consequences of burning it are substantial, both from a climate change perspective and a human health perspective. But almost more importantly, there are other alternatives. Gas reserves, for example, are a better alternative than coal. Energy efficiency alternatives. There's a host of renewables, not the least of which we can count solar and wind, that are coming online, to borrow a phrase from President Trump, big time. So there's alternatives, and people are around the world are moving to those alternatives. But so back to the study bill.
Right.
All the study bills.
Well, I'm curious too. I mean, before we get to the actual, you know, some of the language, I'm curious about your sense of your colleagues, particularly those on the other side of the aisle, the Republicans. Did you get the sense that maybe some of them, or I don't know if you went and talked to them, that they would rather be at the table, given all of the, you know, what you just laid out, this scene that we're seeing both locally and globally, than being on the sidelines and not being part of the conversation? What might Montana look like without this tax revenue that sustains a lot of little projects as well as the state general fund?
Well, I think you can only conclude that's where they are now. They would rather know than not. I've said before to you, and I believe this, that to some extent we're elected with the expectation that we have a desire, a capacity, at least an acknowledgement of the need to see around the next corner. And I think they recognize the next corner concerns the value of coal. And so, yes, they want to know. And so the bill passes out of committee unanimously.
And Mr. Cole, Senator Cole, and I'm talking about Duane Ankeny, even said on the floor, you know, I was one of those who supported this bill. And that he left it at that.
He did. Now, I think highly of Dwayne. We've served, we started as freshmen together in 2007, and he's a very effective legislator. He represents his hometown very well.
Of Colstrip. Mm-hmm.
And his support was important. I suspect if Senator Ankeny had not saw the wisdom of the study, it probably would not have gotten out of natural resources. So for anybody that thinks studying the future of coal and its relevance to Montana is a good idea, they should thank Senator Ankeny. He's due far more credit for this than me. But the question remains, why would anybody in the Senate say no? And you know, Jackie, there's going to be opposition in the House. I still am only skeptically optimistic that it'll pass the House.
Right, that's the tough. That's a tough chamber.
And so the question is why? Why would anybody stand in the way of knowledge? If you think that coal is very, very important and it will remain so for a long time, you should celebrate this study because that should become manifest as the study concludes. Matter of fact, you could make the case, as I did in my opening comments, this is a pro-coal bill. Now, I also said it's not a pro-coal bill. It's not an anti-coal bill. It's a pro-knowledge bill.
Well, then, I mean, I'm just going to jump right to, you know, just as I'm looking at the clock, Senator, and say, what would you, let's say we're going to project into the future. Let's say this bill does pass the legislature and get signed into law, and legislators say, okay, fine. We're going to take SJ5 during the interim. We're going to study it, okay? What would you like to see come out of that? Would you like to see a study bill, some sort of then concrete action, committee bill going into, if we can say, the 2019 legislative session?
What I want this study to reveal is reliable information. I think, based on what I read and what I know and what I study, the result will be coal will have a declining value in the worldwide market going forward. Consequently, it will have declining value for the state of Montana, and that's a problem because we have come to really rely on coal, and given that reliance and given that it's going to have decreasing value, we need to develop a new architecture for our tax structure.
So could that be a solar severance tax, a wind severance tax? I mean, let's talk about that. Well, you know, as a replacement for the coal severance tax.
That's correct. And the language of the study bill does speak to taking a deep dive into the economics of this and saying, okay, if coal is providing us a dollar and the dollar is going to go away, where are you going to find that dollar?
Yes.
And you could find it from other, by taxing other sources of energy production. But people have to be mindful that the tax has almost become a four-letter word in this country, which is crazy to me, because for governments to provide the services that we all have come to expect, the only way a government can assemble money, collect money, is through taxes. They're essential to our way of life. Now, I would probably move in the direction of taxing a $4 billion industry on an annual basis that we principally don't tax at this point in time, and that's the tourist industry. Now, we don't give visitors to our great state any real consistent opportunity to contribute to the state's future.
And we did talk about that. Option infrastructure tax.
And property tax relief. I mean, people have to be mindful that local option bill that I'm moving speaks to not only infrastructure, but significant property tax relief.
And I will just tell our listeners that I will provide a link on the website for this particular show so they can listen to that conversation. But I want to, you know, stay on this topic. And
I'd like to take it to the next bill. So we've got this study, this resolution for a study that aims to imagine Montana without coal. Maybe it gets out of the House, maybe it doesn't. But it ties in very tightly with another bill that I just introduced in the Montana Senate, Senate Bill 190.
Senate Bill 190, and the committee, as we're speaking today, has not taken executive action on that bill.
We had a great hearing. Senator Dick Barrett from Missoula is due a tremendous amount of credit for helping craft the bill. It is the climate change bill of the 2017 session. And so consequently, you might think, wow, that's a big deal.
Right. And let me, just for the listeners' benefit, give the short title. establish monitoring and reporting requirements for greenhouse gas emissions.
And Jackie, that's all it does. Whereas some can say, well, it's the climate change bill of the session. That sounds like a big deal. The bill is not a big deal. The bill is a very, very, very modest step in the direction of anticipating a future when greenhouse gases will be seen for what they are, and that is, because of their commonness, a problem. So all the bill does, Jackie, all the bill does is say Montana should record emissions. The bill calls for the development of a greenhouse gas registry. And then the bill says, the Board of Environmental Review, working closely with the Department of Environmental Quality, should develop a plan for capping emissions and eventually reducing emissions. But the plan doesn't have to be implemented. That's all it does. One more thing. It provides a very, 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 very modest fee on emitters to help pay for the maintenance of the registry.
So you're talking the big industry, right? You're not talking individual motorists or ranchers.
The big power companies. And the cost of the program on an annual basis is estimated to be about $70,000 a year to have somebody that's responsible for writing all this stuff down. Now, that's all a registry is. It's like writing down the checks in your checkbook.
So you see the big utilities, say your Northwestern Power, Northwestern Energy, your Montana Dakota Utilities, for example, are among the co-ops.
If you're a major emitter, you're going to pay a very, very, very modest fee on those emissions. So the state of Montana has about $70,000 to prop up this. We got to stand up this program. It's just writing the stuff down in one spot. Now, many of these data are already collected, but they're not in one spot, and not all of the data are being collected. So we're calling for a greenhouse gas registry. We're calling for the development of a plan to cap and eventually reduce emissions. The plan doesn't have to be implemented. That's it. That's all Senate Bill 190 does. It's a very, very modest bill. It does require, if you vote yes, it's tacit acknowledgement that climate change is a problem. And I would bet a nickel that bill's going to struggle to get out of that committee. So I would ask you, Jackie, go to every one of those committee members and ask a simple question. How are you going to vote on 190? If they say no, just why? Why? Why would you not want to begin collecting data on what we know is going to be a focus soon? Whether President Trump chooses to focus on this or not, I just said earlier, but presidents can't control worldwide markets. I promise you, they cannot control the physics and chemistry that define the planet. You can't debate the fact that these gases are a problem. It's just a fact. It's a fact that's been known for well over 100 years.
So
Jackie, if we didn't have these gases, if we didn't have CO2 floating about in the atmosphere, and it's very, very uncommon, it's so uncommon that it's described in parts per million. Well, it's very uncommon. It's technically called a trace gas because it's so very uncommon. But absent these trace gases, you know what the average temperature of the planet would be? This is average temperature now. 0 degrees Fahrenheit. Life as we know it would not be possible without these trace gases because they're very, very good at holding energy, sunlight, solar energy that has bounced off the planet and would otherwise go back into space. These gases are sitting there like a blanket over the planet to keep the planet warm enough for life. This is not debatable. Moreover, it's not debatable that they're becoming very common. We've had the most important data set collected, I would argue, in the history of mankind. People can go to it. Just Google the Keeling curve.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to those who are opposed, who potentially could be opposed. We probably could identify members that are downright opposed, but we're not going to do that in this show.
As a journalist, you can find them.
Oh, I know.
Ask them why.
I know. But I want to go back to the point. I mean, basically, as a scientist, as a biologist, mm-hmm. you're saying, let's get a starting point. Let's find out. This is data collection.
That's correct.
Which does not exist today.
That's correct.
So, it's hard to measure anything if you don't have anything to measure against.
That's correct. Sooner rather than later, and I'm not thinking in 2 years, I'm thinking in 20, you're going to have to write all this stuff down, and you're going to have to manage greenhouse gases. The world is already there. The United States is kind of behind for reasons that I can't quite accept. None of this is debatable. You can debate some things. You can debate what is known as sort of tempo and mode. You can debate how fast changes are going to take place. How fast will Montana continue to warm? And you can debate mode. How much is it going to warm? But you can't debate what's coming. And we already know from the best science. Here's some for your listeners are going to appreciate this. The best models. Well, forget the models for a moment. Real empirical data show that the month of March in Montana is the signature month for climate change. Is now 6 to 7 degrees warmer than it was 30 years ago. Warm marshes mean that the high elevation snows melt earlier than they used to. That dries that high country out and promotes these big durable fires that we're now seeing. The best models indicate that in not too long in the future, 30, 40 years, but likely that Missoula gets no snow. Not less snow, no snow. The best models indicate that Montana is going to become increasingly more arid. We may get more rain in some places, but we're going to get hotter everywhere, and so we have greater aridity. The best models show, Jackie, that in about 40 years, our coolest summers will be hotter than our hottest summers. Now, this is a very different Montana that we're imagining in the near future.
I think the agriculture community is probably one of the best indicators, and I turned to a group of business leaders. They're Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, everything, industry leaders, environmentalists, and so forth. It's called Risky Business, and Greg Page, who used to head Cargill, is a member of that group, and he has spoken in Montana about the agriculture community. So and they're looking at it from money, because they're trying to mitigate risk.
Right. The Montana Farmers Union testified in support of Senate Bill 190, this greenhouse gas registry.
And they invited Greg Page to come and speak to their big convention last fall.
If you're just willing to accept the facts of the matter, you should vote for.
But there's a lot of skepticism, as you have seen, as a scientist, skepticism about science. And whether or not there's an agenda. I mean, it's almost attacking the messenger rather than just the data collected.
Yep, I understand that. I would have you believe that to some extent this is a difficult problem because people can't see it. So I did something with the hearing that I'd like to walk your listeners through. I know we don't have time forever. I think we have about 5 minutes left. But here's two examples of why I think it's tough because people can't see things. They can't see the end of the atmosphere. They look up in the sky and they say, well, Mike, it goes on forever. I look to my right, I look to my left, I look up above me. It seems to go on forever. And I say, well, that's interesting. However, we know that the planet is very thin-skinned. When you look at the width of the atmosphere, about 60 miles, and you compare it to the circumference of the planet, we're very, very, very thin-skinned. Not unlike us in how easy it is to just suffer from a paper cut. The planet's thin-skinned, and consequently the skin is easy to violate. That's the atmosphere, and you violate it by putting too many of these greenhouse gases in it. But here's the point I made in the committee about not being able to see things. Now, you can't see emissions. You can't see CO2, so they're easy to ignore. But do you know, Jackie, with a gallon of gas, everybody's familiar with a gallon of gasoline, and let's assume in your vehicle that you get 20 miles for every gallon of gas that you burn. For every gallon of gas that you burn, this is just simple chemistry now. Every gallon of gas you burn, you create 20 pounds of CO2. People look at me, and I demonstrated this for the committee so they could clearly understand, how can you take 6.5 pounds of gas? A gallon of gas weighs about 6.5 pounds. How in the world can you get 20 pounds of something from 6.5 pounds of something else? It seems like, well, that math doesn't work. Well, here's what happens. When you burn that gasoline, that 6.5 pounds of gas includes about a little more than five pounds of carbon. You burn the gas, the carbon's got to go somewhere. That carbon is naturally looking for oxygen to combine with, and it does so with one carbon atom and two oxygen atoms, that's CO2, those oxygen atoms are much heavier than the carbon, about 30% bigger. An oxygen atom is just by nature bigger than a carbon atom. So when you take 5 pounds of carbon, it's emitted when you burn that gallon of gas, and it looks for, each atom's looking for two atoms of oxygen, they bring about 15 pounds of oxygen to the table. So you take a gallon of gas at about 6.5 pounds and you burn it, you generate 20 pounds of CO2 each and every gallon. So what I did with the committee, showed them this. I had little molecules with atoms and they could see it, they could feel it. And then I gave them a 20-pound dumbbell. And I said, look, you might think 20 pounds is not that much. It's pretty heavy. Now imagine, members of the committee, that every gallon of gas you burned, you had to throw out a 20-pound dumbbell of CO2. I promise you, you'd start to take notice. And just because it's not there doesn't mean it's not there. Mm-hmm. Just because something is out of sight does not mean it should be out of mind.
Well, you know, it's funny, though. Like I said, and I go back to the agriculture community, they're talking about this.
Yes, yes.
And one of the things they're saying is that through ranching, we're capturing carbon in our pastures, on the prairie.
I had a bill.
And so
that's
this
right.
This is the change that's happening independent of your Senate bill.
That's right. And we can actually manage Montana's farmlands and ranch lands to help sequester carbon and keep carbon out of the atmosphere.
Right. So there is a benefit, I suppose, to be at the table for those who...
Yes, there is.
Not being a proponent or opponent of your bill. I know this conversation will continue on because the committee still needs to take executive.
Yeah, and I'd hope you'd ask them the simple question, why. You know, one of the most important questions anybody can ask of any legislator is why. Why did you vote that way? I'm afraid that many people would find that often we really don't have good answers as to why. And I'd love to do a show with you to talk about the legislative process. It does not promote quality work. By design, our approach to governance, the way we manage our committees and our time here, does not promote quality work. It promotes quantity. It does not promote quality, and I've been working on that for a decade to try to do little things with our legislative procedures to substitute quality for quantity. But anyway, ask them why on Senate Bill 190, and I don't know why anybody could stand in opposition to beginning to record emissions. How can something be improved if it isn't written down? To measure allows you to properly monitor. The need to limit emissions is coming, and that's all Senate Bill 190 aims to do, is just write it down. It's a very, very modest bill. It's going to struggle to get out of committee because I think it requires a tacit acknowledgement that climate change is a problem, and too many of my teammates aren't willing to make that, to take that step and acknowledge the problem. And for that, I don't understand.
Well, that will have to be the last word because we're out of time. Thank you so much, Senator Mike Phillips of Bozeman, for joining us.
It's always my pleasure.
You've been listening to Capital Connections. Thank you for joining me. I'm Jackie Yamanaka. The Capital Connections theme music is courtesy of the Alex Nauman Trio. Capital Connections is a production of YPR News.